Are you feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, like you're just an Uber driver to your kids' endless appointments? Do you wonder, is this all there is? Stop driving around and try something different. Book in with Body and Mind Online for expert speech therapy, occupational therapy, psychologist and counsellors via telehealth. I founded Body and Mind Online 5 years ago, and it has since been one of the most inclusive therapy centres in the country. This podcast is my passion project. But I've realized that by not openly recommending Body and Mind Online, I'm leaving many of you to navigate the daunting task of finding the right providers on your own. Stop the struggle and get the support that you and your family deserve. Visit adhdmums.com.au and visit the therapy page to take the first step forward towards a balanced life with Body and Mind Online. Hello and welcome back to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Trigger warning, if you have not looked at this episode title, if you continue to listen, you will hear two lived experiences from two different women who talk about suicide. If that is going to trigger you in any way, please urge you to click back and go into an episode that is not in this mini-series. Today, we're diving into a topic that's not just difficult, it's also urgent. And it is the harrowing reality of maternal suicide. It is a horrible fact that up to 20% of maternal deaths are due to suicide. The way it continues on with silence, and the reason that I'm doing this episode, is to shed light on where the darkness hides and what hides in the darkness. And by shedding light, it can't continue because there'll be too many people talking about it, watching, and helping. One of the reasons I'm doing this episode is because I recently went to the park with two friends, and me being me, I always like to go to the deep and heavy topics. I think it's probably part of my autistic self. And I was talking about how I had a full mental breakdown. I don't want to minimize it and say it felt like a breakdown. It was a breakdown in March this year, and I didn't seek help or talk to anybody and change my medications for 9 months. So I went on a steady decline for 9 months before I said anything to anybody. Yet, I run a podcast about putting on your oxygen mask before helping others. Sometimes mothers let their mental health go too long. We are inundated with appointments and they're expensive. They're time consuming. They're draining. I hate doing appointments for myself. I hate doing appointments for my kids. But like, I'll do the bare minimum for myself because all I do is attend appointments and it's draining. And so if I have to go to the GP, I'll just prefer not to go at all and go without rather than have to have another appointment and go somewhere else. And I think that contributes to women not necessarily asking for help, being expected to shoulder it. And when they're expected to shoulder it, it's like, well, you've got kids, you should be grateful. Some people don't get to have kids. They're only young once. Like, I just hate hearing that shit. Suicide is now one of the leading causes of maternal death during pregnancy and the first year of birth. Many mothers who take their own lives have experienced severe depression that was either untreated or undertreated because they felt they were unable to ask for help and didn't receive the support they needed from professionals in their community. So up to 20% of maternal deaths are due to suicide, making it more common than deaths from postpartum hemorrhage or hypertensive disorders, or anything else. These aren't just statistics, these are real people. And often mothers are suffering silently, unnoticed, until it's too late. Motherhood is a roller coaster of emotions. There's joy, exhaustion, love, frustration, boredom. But something we don't always discuss is the overwhelming darkness that some women face in this silence. Despite the progress, mental health struggles are still really stigmatized, especially for mothers. There's this pressure to be grateful, to be happy, because at least you get to stay home with your kids, right? Or at least you got to have kids. They're only young once. Oh, blink and it will be gone. I'm so grateful. And social media does not help this at all. And it's this like pretend gratitude that I think makes the struggle deeper and silences us. I don't think we can talk about suicide without talking about maternal depression. So why do women sometimes feel depressed? It's so complex. Depression doesn't have one cause. And sometimes people believe that depression is a symptom of something else. Is someone just depressed? Is that the answer? It's like saying someone just has back pain, but I don't know. Do they have a slipped disc? Is there something wrong with their movement? Do they have a cancer in their spine? Like, why is there back pain? I actually really do agree with that. Depression does seem like a symptom. Yeah, but why? But why? Why do some women feel like that and some don't? And, you know, there's so much research and there's so much confusion, but I'm going to just like try and make it as simple as I can. And I can't go detailed into everything, but we know that hormones play a significant role, specifically in postpartum depression. And we know that there is some massive hormonal shifts and these really do affect our mental health. However, depression is not just hormones. Motherhood is, you know, filled with elements of love and fulfillment. And sometimes expectations don't meet reality, and our expectations and our excitement to finally be a mother, if that has been a big dream for you, can be really challenging and stressful because it doesn't go the way you think it will. If you have a neurodivergent child, sometimes they're a little trickier. Also, you don't have a lot of sleep, and sleep is one of the largest risk factors towards depression and anxiety. So a lack of sleep, broken sleep, exhaustion does not help. I mean, you've got to add to that financial worries, job stress. If you're the primary caregiver, breastfeeding is enough to, yeah, some women really struggle with that. And it's no wonder that we face mental health challenges. We are not supposed to have all of these children alone, right? Like, we are supposed to be in a village. Where's the village? Because I did not have one. And, you know, chronic stress largely just changes the way that the brain functions, and it can contribute to the development of depression. We do know that women tend to be then very sensitive to relational issues, and often their partner, male or female, the dynamic shifts. And does it shift for the better? Probably not. I don't know many women who have had a baby and said that their relationships improved. I actually have not met one. So one of the things that women get told if they presented a GP is that it's normal. So someone telling you that your feelings are normal, I find it to be quite minimizing, because if you're going in there going, I'm severely depressed, and they go, oh, that's normal. Really? That's a sad state of affairs, isn't it then? Often self-care like is impossible because you can't, because you have a baby. I remember I tried to seek help at a psychologist. I had two kids under two, and I think I had a couple of sessions with her, and then she kept telling me to take time out to myself. But the only time I had out was to go to her appointment, and then she was like, go to the beach and do all this other stuff. But I didn't have any friends and family. We didn't have any money for a babysitter. My husband worked 14 hours a day, and it just felt like she was living in fairyland. I was like, I don't know where you live, but like, I actually physically can't do that. A lot of mothers experience depression throughout the motherhood journey, and it's often exacerbated by the relentless pressure of caregiving, financial stress, relationship changes. But it doesn't always present the way that we think. It can be postpartum depression, anxiety. It could even be psychosis. It's not just feeling sad or down. For mums, it can actually look like anger, irritability, constant guilt, feeling disconnected from their children. You might feel numb, detached, overwhelmed, and these might be dismissed as just part of the parenting journey, but it seems like a dangerous oversimplification. I don't think we should be telling mothers that this is normal, because we don't want to minimize the experience, stop them seeking help, and actually it can be really serious. Let's jump over to a recording from Sarah, who is sharing her story. This is not her real voice, in regards to how she became so suicidal, what led up to that for her, and how she felt afterwards. Anyway, I don't want to take away from her story, so I'm going to just let it play.
My name is Sarah, and sharing this story is something I never thought I'd do. On the surface, I seemed like the person who had it all together. I was a mother of two, always devoted to my children, the one people look to for support. From the outside, it appeared like I had the perfect life, a loving husband, two wonderful kids, but behind closed doors, I was unraveling. It started after the birth of my second child. First, I thought the exhaustion was just part of the deal, sleepless nights, the demands of a newborn, but as the months wore on, it became clear that this wasn't just normal exhaustion. I wasn't just tired. I was slipping into a darkness I couldn't pull myself out of. What began as fatigue quickly turned into a deep sadness. Worse still, I began to feel detached from my children. I loved them dearly, but the joy I once felt as their mother was fading away, and I didn't know how to bring it back. I kept it all to myself. How could I admit that I wasn't coping? What kind of mother feels this way? So I hid my pain. I smiled through it, pretending everything was fine, but inside I was drowning. The guilt was overwhelming. I felt like I was failing my children every single day. They deserved more attention, more energy, more love than I was able to give. Each day that guilt weighed heavier, and it felt like I was sinking deeper and deeper. And then the thoughts began. But soon they grew louder, more insistent. I began to believe that maybe my family would be better off without me. I wasn't thinking about dying. I just wanted the relentless pain to stop. I felt like I was a burden to those I loved the most. One night, it all became too much. My youngest had been sick, and I hadn't slept in days. My husband was working long hours, unaware of the battle raging inside me. That evening, as I stood in front of the bathroom mirror, I barely recognized the hollow person staring back at me. I felt nothing, just numbness. And in that moment, I truly believed that the only way to end the suffering was to end it all. I made a plan. I wrote letters to my kids apologizing for not being the mother they deserved and telling them how much I loved them. I convinced myself that by leaving, I was protecting them. I took a handful of pills, feeling oddly calm, as if this was the right choice for everyone. But my husband came home early that night. He found me unconscious on the bathroom floor and immediately called for help. I woke up in the hospital, filled with shame and disbelief that I had come so close to ending everything. The days that followed were some of the hardest of my life. After a stint in the ICU, I was admitted to a psychiatric facility, a terrifying but necessary step in my journey. Surrounded by others who were also struggling, I began to open up for the first time. I talked about the depression that had consumed me, the guilt that had suffocated me, and the hopelessness that had led me to that dark place. In therapy, I learned that I wasn't weak or broken. I was suffering from postpartum depression. It wasn't my fault, and it wasn't something I could have just snapped out of. Hearing this helped lift some of the burden I had been carrying for so long. Recovery wasn't easy. There were days when I wondered if I would ever feel like myself again. But with therapy, medication, and the support of my husband, I slowly began to heal. I'm still healing, and I'm okay with that. I'm grateful to still be here, to watch my children grow, and to be a part of their lives. I've come to understand that asking for help isn't a sign of weakness. It's an act of courage. If I could tell other mothers anything, it would be this: you are not alone. It's okay to not be okay. There is no shame in asking for help.
I just want to acknowledge Sarah here and how brave she is to share her story. There has been so many women that I've spoken to that have shared their story around suicide, and the amount of shame that they have around it because they have children is unbelievable. The amount of judgment that I've seen online, unbelievable. And for other mothers to comment on social media the way they do when someone is not enjoying it, I think is pretty shit. And I've seen a few people talk about a suicide attempt or thinking about suicide, and I just see a lot of comments around, how could you do that to your children? That's selfish. And that stops women speaking out. The reason that I'm putting this episode in with the DV miniseries is because I don't want women to think that they are the only one who has ever thought of suicide or attempted. It's just not true. It is so much more common than what you think, and it is just not spoken about. And so this episode is all about providing a reference point, validating that it is really, really hard. And thank you to Sarah for sharing her message. And Sarah said to me offline that she felt really ashamed to seek help because she believed that she should just be happy to be a mother and grateful. And her GP had made a few comments to her around that, which had put her off asking for help, seeming that she didn't love her children. You can't say that a mother that attempts suicide does not love her children. Often a theme that I hear is around, I'm not enough. I'm ruining their lives. I'm so sad and depressed. I'm not enough for them. They don't deserve this. I shouldn't be in this world. They're better off without me. And I'm not justifying suicide in any way, but I'm just saying it's not that the mother says, I don't care about my children. They believe in that moment that their children are better off without them. I think feeling that you should be happy because of the blessings, hashtag blessing and hashtag gratitude, they're only young once, really exacerbates it. And it instead leaves the feelings of overwhelming sadness and anger and guilt. And this stops women from seeking help when that's exactly what they should be doing, is seeking help. And it makes the depression even more dangerous because it becomes silent and quiet. I do hear this a little bit where, let's say if one of my friends has had a bad day, she might say to me, oh, I said to my husband, I've had a really bad day. And then he said, well, you wanted to have four, didn't you? Unhelpful. So I think throwing things like that don't help. It stops asking for help, and asking for help is what will reduce, I think, suicide ideation and attempts in this country. And we need to talk about it more. For women to feel that they're not the only one is really important. And for someone who has suicidal thoughts, it can be really hard to know who to talk to, but having a safe person to speak to, I think, is really important. A flyaway comment that motherhood is hard, it may stop those women from asking for help if they feel like everyone feels that way and they're not being grateful enough. The other thing as well, there's a real commonality around if you've had IVF or you've had, you know, sperm donor, or you've gone through a lot to get this baby, maybe you've had multiple miscarriages and you get this baby, and this is what people have told me. You then feel like you can't complain. You can't say you've had enough. You can't say you're tired because that baby's cost you $50,000 in fertility treatments and you've been through so much to have that baby. But then the realities of being a mother are also hard. And I think if you're having kids over 40, you just get more fatigued than what you do in your 20s. It's just fact. You might be more patient with your kids, more mature, maybe you're more set up financially, but physically, it's tiring. I think there's a really common misconception that suicide always comes with all these warning signs and like a specific plan and an outward expression of intent. And it happens to other people, not people that I know. I think that's just a misconception and it's not always the case. Suicide ideation in mothers often starts like quite passively. I wish I could just go to sleep and never wake up. Everyone would be better off without me. Now, these are dangerous thoughts, even when they're passive, because they can quickly escalate to an active plan if there is underlying depression that isn't addressed. One of the main reasons that maternal suicide is so tragic is because it's often preventable. But that requires the mother and healthcare providers, the partner, to be open and honest about what's actually going on. When women are screened for postpartum depression, for example, GPs, obstetricians should be asking about feelings of hopelessness, isolation, entrapment, key factors that are actually right before suicidal thoughts. But yet that education piece doesn't seem to be there. It's like, are you thinking about suicide? No. But yet they might be stuck in about 6 months of hopelessness. Trigger warning, another lived experience. The reason I share this story is because it really challenges the belief around there's lots of warning signs. There actually isn't always a lot of warning signs. It can actually be a really quick decision. This is not her real voice.
For as long as I can remember, I was the strong one, always the person everyone relied on. Juggling work, motherhood, and marriage, I had mastered the art of appearing like I had it all together. I was a mum to two amazing boys with a career I'd worked hard for and a husband who seemed like the perfect partner. To the outside world, everything looked picture perfect, but inside I was unraveling. It was a typical Wednesday evening when it all came crashing down. My husband was on a business trip, something that happened often enough, so I was left to manage the household on my own. It wasn't unusual for me to handle the kids, work, and everything in between. I'd done it countless times before, but this night was different. The exhaustion I felt wasn't just from a lack of sleep. It was a deep emotional fatigue that had been building for months, maybe even years. After I finally got the kids to bed, I sat on the couch, staring into the quiet, dark house. That's when it hit me, a suffocating wave of pressure, anxiety, and sadness all at once. I had been carrying so much for so long, trying to be everything for everyone, and it suddenly became unbearable. I felt like I was drowning, unable to breathe under the weight of all my responsibilities. I had been holding it together for so long, but I couldn't do it anymore. Then the thought crossed my mind, I don't want to do this anymore. I was shocked at how clear and final the thought felt. I had never really considered ending my life before, not like this. Sure, there had been bad days, times when I was overwhelmed or stressed, but this felt different. It wasn't just fleeting sadness or frustration, it was a sense of complete hopelessness. I felt trapped in a life that had consumed me. I felt like I was disappearing. Without thinking, I walked to the bathroom, opened the medicine cabinet, and took out a bottle of pills. My hands shook as I opened it. There was no crying, no hesitation. I felt numb, completely disconnected from everything and everyone. I wasn't thinking about what it would mean for my kids or my husband. I just wanted the overwhelming pressure to stop. I sat down on the bathroom floor, the pills in my hand, and time seemed to freeze. The house was so quiet, and in that stillness, the darkness felt all-consuming. I remember thinking, maybe this is how I can finally find some peace. But then my phone rang, startling me so much that I dropped the bottle. I looked at the screen and saw my best friend's name. She never called this late, and for a second I considered not answering. But something inside me told me to pick it up. From the moment I said hello, she knew something was wrong. She didn't push for details or ask me what was going on. Her voice was calm, like an anchor pulling me back to reality. She had no idea that she had just saved my life. As we talked, I put the pills back in the bottle, my hands still shaking. Her words brought me back from the edge, and by the time we hung up, the fog had started to lift. I sat there for a long time afterward, trying to process everything that had just happened. The next morning, I made the call I had been avoiding for too long. I told my doctor everything about the pills, the overwhelming sadness, and the phone call that had saved me. She listened and connected me with a therapist who specialized in helping people like me. It wasn't easy to ask for help, but it was the first step on the road to healing. Looking back, I realized that the pressure had been building for a long time. I had ignored all the signs because I thought I had to be strong for everyone else. But now I know that asking for help doesn't make me weak. It makes me human. Therapy has helped me learn how to take care of myself, not just for my kids, but for me. I still have hard days, but now I know how to cope with them. I've learned that it's okay to not have it all together all the time, every day. I'm grateful for that phone call, grateful that my friend unknowingly pulled me back from the brink. And now I'm still here, still learning, still growing.
I just want to acknowledge how brave she is to share her story. Let's talk about some of the causes and the risk factors that contribute to maternal depression and suicide. For many women, hormonal changes during and after pregnancy play a massive role. There's estrogen and progesterone, which can impact mood, mental health, and that's why postpartum depression often follows childbirth. But this is not just about hormones, it's about lack of sleep, chronic stress, isolation, and trauma possibly from birth. A lot of the time, maternal depression goes unnoticed and underreported and undertreated because of the stigma of mental health. Women fear that if they disclose their struggles, they could be faced with discrimination, people thinking that they're a horrible mother, they don't love their child, or even losing custody of their children. People who are considering suicide may show signs that they're thinking or planning an attempt. Some of the warning signs of suicide involve talking about unbearable pain. They're talking about death, talking about feeling hopeless, worthless, guilty, shame, anger, feeling like they are a burden. They can have changes in mood or behaviour, such as another suicide attempt before this, more drinking or drug use. You may notice that they start to take less care in their personal appearance. They may be withdrawn. They may start giving away possessions. They may start to change their sleeping and eating. They may be feeling angry or reckless. If you want to open up a conversation around suicide, I would, one, pick a time and place that's private. You don't want to start talking like a play date. Two, start to really talk about your concern and the fact that you really want to help them. For example, I'm worried because I've noticed that you've been talking about how sad and hopeless you are a lot. How can I help you? Or it seems like you've been really up and down lately. I've been there myself. Talking really helps. What are you feeling? Some people think you shouldn't ask directly if they have thought about suicide. I think there's nothing better at this time than to ask about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? Have you had thoughts about suicide? You're not going to put that thought in their brain. Like, if it's there, it's already there. I've done this with friends and said, I'm actually really worried about you and I'm worried that you are going to harm yourself. And I've had one person say, I'm worried about that too. And I've had another person go, I think I'm just having an awful day. This day is so beyond awful, but I'm okay. If I wake up tomorrow and I feel the same, I will let you know. If they don't want to talk to you, if they don't answer and you're not sure what to do, just keep the emotional door open. Keep asking and they will know that you're a safe person to speak to. If they say, yes, I am actually thinking about suicide, that doesn't mean they're going to like do something right that second. So don't panic. Listen calmly. And what I think you should not say is, but you've got so much going for you. What would I do without you? Think of what this would do to your kids. Okay, none of that's helpful. What I think you should say is, it sounds really painful and difficult. God, I wish I had all the answers. I'm so glad you told me this. I really want you to keep talking to me about it. I understand you're struggling. I just really want to listen. And tell them that you want to connect them with some help. Get them talking and you'll soon have an understanding of whether there's a plan, there's no plan, it's just thoughts. Not that to minimize it, it's just thoughts, but thoughts are easier to work with than a real plan. And, you know, then start to talk to them about what they can do to connect to help. I think it's important here is that if they say, please don't tell anyone, it's probably a hard secret to keep. And that's a tricky one that you nearly need to have more detail around, like how quickly they were planning on acting and what the specific situation is. You can call services to ask, this is the situation, what should I do? That's probably a good point of call. I wouldn't say, I promise to keep it a secret and then immediately call their husband, like, or their wife or their friend. Like, if you're not planning on keeping it a secret, don't say that you will because you've just broken trust.
Above, I have said to make sure that you respect someone's privacy, that you don't go and call people without their consent. However, it's also got to be balanced with your responsibility to ensure their safety. So deciding whether to intervene or respect privacy is a really difficult decision and it would depend on the individual circumstances. But certain signs can help determine when a situation is an emergency and when it needs immediate attention. Respecting someone's privacy is important when a person openly shares their thoughts to you but doesn't have an intent or plan to act, expresses that they feel low, overwhelmed, or hopeless, but without indications of imminent danger. They have no plan, but they're letting you know some very heavy thoughts and feelings. It's important to respect their privacy if they seek support from you and then agree to talk to a professional. And they are suggesting through their feelings and behaviors and statements that they are willing to work through their feelings and they want to make some changes. Or if they have an active family support in place, let's say you know that they're going home to a safe house with a partner that they talk to, friends, sisters. In these cases, offering support, listening, and encouraging professional help is the best approach. However, you need to remain vigilant for changes that could indicate a worsening risk. For example, when to call someone. You should call for help or take immediate action if any of the following is present. The person has a clear plan or intent to harm themselves, or they have talked about specific methods or a time frame for their suicide attempt. They are searching online for methods to harm themselves and discussing it in detail. They are actively preparing for suicide, giving away possessions, saying goodbye, withdrawing from social interactions, writing a note, talking about how their death would make it easier for everyone around them. or they expressing feelings of complete hopelessness with no way out? Everyone would be better off without me. I can't go on like this. Big red flags. Or erratic behaviour, reckless, abusing substances, taking risks, which is not in their normal personality. Emotional states changing rapidly. There's a history of suicide attempts. They are going to be at a higher risk, or if they're deteriorating rapidly. Now, this can be really tricky because it can move from one to the other. If you're unsure, it's always good to call the suicide prevention hotline and ask. Talk about the specific situation and ask what you should do next. It's critical to understand that suicide thoughts are not a normal emotional state. Even if someone is in immediate danger, they do need help and intervention. You can respect their privacy by listening, being compassionate, but don't hesitate to take action if you believe their life is at risk. If in doubt, prioritise safety.
Probably one of the biggest tools with maternal depression is to build a really strong support network. And this can be pretty simple, like reaching out to friends and just having people to talk about the realities of motherhood with. If you don't feel like you've got any safe people, tap into this podcast. In the show notes, I'm going to put the Untold Struggles of Motherhood. Send me an email if you want more of those. I can absolutely do them. There's a lot of women that are struggling with motherhood. Sometimes women find that going back to work really helps them, and being alone with the baby is actually just not what they want, and they need to be around people, and they're so much happier when their child is in childcare or with a grandparent and they're back at work. So, you know, maybe being accepting that everyone's different and maybe what they said they would do with their child is not what they're doing, and that's okay. For partners and loved ones, it can be really hard because we are relying on partners and other people to pick up this stuff, to help with the daily task, listen without judgment and encourage them. And the stigma really prevents people from asking for help. And if a partner is having trouble, let's say, for example, if my friend is having really bad depression and her husband is saying things like, but you wanted this baby, I didn't want this baby, you should be grateful, you're on maternity leave, what do you have to worry about? I wish I could not work. Or what do you mean go back to work? Look at the price of childcare. We can't afford a psychologist. If they were saying things like that, you might want to jump in and actually help them know what are some things that they should say, because clearly they're missing a few skills. Just remember that asking someone directly if they're thinking about suicide doesn't increase their risk. It actually opens the door to help them receive the help they need. And also it lets them know that you are okay to talk about it. And you might be the only person that they know that they can talk about this with. So be that person and keep asking. The deep and dark subjects like this live in the dark. As soon as we ask the direct question, if you are thinking about suicide, it opens up. And that is where the sense of community is. So ask and be okay with what they say. Don't wait until it feels too late. If you are feeling this yourself, you need to reach out for support. I'll be including a list of resources in the show notes. Remember, you are not alone. Motherhood is incredibly challenging, and there's no shame in admitting that you need help. The bravest thing you can do for yourself and your family is to take the next step for healing. Thank you for tuning in today. And as always, take care of yourself and know that you are not always alone. If you feel triggered, upset by this episode, please reach out to the services in the show notes. And I can't say enough, prioritize yourself, put your own oxygen mask on. And if you've experienced depression, feel free to talk to other mums about it. We can proactively talk about it. And if you're talking to somebody about it, they may open up themselves. And there's the power in community right there. Thank you so much for listening. I hope this episode has helped you. And take care of yourself and others as always.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.